You're listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory in British Columbia. How do you live a remarkable life? Let's find out with today's guest, Chris Guillebeau. Welcome to another episode of Question Everything, where we connect young leaders with experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today I'm here with Chris Guillebeau. Chris is best known as a New York Times bestselling author and as the first person under the age of 35 to travel to every country in the world. His latest book, Born for This, which we'll be talking about today, focuses on helping people find the work that they were meant to do. Chris also hosts an event in Portland each year called the World Domination Summit, which brings people together to ask the question, how do you live a remarkable life in a conventional world? But beyond all that, Chris is someone who, in all of his work, is so focused on building community, serving his audience, and inspiring people to follow their dreams. In today's episode, we learn how Chris began his 11-year quest to visit every country in the world, and talk about what it takes to accomplish large goals that seem unattainable. We discuss how important it is to establish connections and community through your work, and how you can live a remarkable life by listening to the voice of fear and stepping into it. So thanks so much for being with us today, Chris.
Hey, Carly. Thanks so much for having me.
Can you start by telling us what inspired you to travel to every country in the world?
It wasn't a big strategic plan in the beginning. It was just I loved to travel, and I loved making discoveries and exploring. And I spent about 4 years living in West Africa on board a hospital ship. I was an aid worker there. And out of that experience, I went to lots of different countries in Africa and then in Europe as well. And after I had been to maybe 30 countries or so, I set the goal of going to 100. And as I got closer to 100, I thought, well, this is cool, but I need like a real goal because, you know, if you go to 100, that's about half the countries, so you can pick and choose and maybe just go to the easy ones. So that's when I decided to double up and go to every country in the world. And it turned into an 11-year quest that I wrote about on my blog.
When you told your family and friends about that goal, were they supportive or did they kind of discourage the idea and think you were crazy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think at that point, my friends and family were used to me doing some crazy things. So it's not like this came out of the blue, like the whole thing about like moving to live in Sierra Leone and Liberia. I was always an entrepreneur. I wasn't good at working for other people. So in fact, I was a terrible employee. So I had always kind of, you know, worked on my own. So they were used to me doing some different stuff. And I think, you know, at first they said, oh, you know, we'll see if he actually does that. But then I followed through and, you know, over time they got used to it.
Traveling the world is something that I think so many people dream about for their whole life, but I can imagine that it would have been incredibly difficult and scary for you at times. I'm wondering what the biggest challenge was that you faced on that journey.
You know, when you said it was scary, I mean, I think the things that were scary were not so much physical danger for the most part. You know, it was an 11-year quest, and so there certainly were some things that, you know, might have been scary along the way. But I think probably the most daunting thing was just as I kind of, you know, contemplated, do I say yes to this adventure? Because, you know, you said something about how did your friends think it was a crazy idea? Well, I actually thought it was a crazy idea when I first had it. You know, I was like, is this really possible? And, you know, can I actually do this and see it through? So I thought about it for probably several months at least before I decided to really go for it. So the biggest challenge was like, am I going to adopt this goal and, you know, kind of build a lot of my life around it? And once I had that idea, like it just wouldn't leave me alone. You know, if you have a crazy idea, I think you should pay attention to it because often it's going to lead to something that's important for you.
For sure. How do you think you develop that mindset of, I'm just going to do it? I feel like to make that commitment can be really scary.
Well, for sure. Well, I don't think it's about, you know, overcoming the fear, or conquering the fear, you know, all these kind of like masculine, you know, verbs that we use about like, you know, that we're just going to, you know, kick fear in the face and pretend it doesn't exist. You know, like I see people using that language a lot online. And, you know, I'm a person who had a lot of insecurities and, you know, a lot of self-doubt. And I guess the way that you get over it is by doing, you know, you do smaller things. And as you do smaller things, you know, then you get a greater vision as you build confidence. And so, you know, as I said, like that particular project, I didn't have the vision of going to every country in the world until I had spent time in a bunch of different places. And so the more I did, the more comfortable I became, you know, taking greater risks. But I don't think anyone is born, you know, an innate risk taker.
Having gone through all that and accomplishing such an incredible goal, do you have any advice for young people who have really far-fetched goals that seem unattainable?
Well, I think if they have goals like that, that's wonderful. I talk to a lot of young people who they don't necessarily have this big goal. They have it's much more of like a longing. It's like I want something, but I don't quite know what it is. And they feel so much pressure in our North American society because they feel pressure to kind of know and like here's what my life purpose is at age 20, and I'm gonna follow this linear path. And so I would say the first thing is let's do anything we can to kind of remove that pressure. And say, okay, I may not be able to have everything figured out for a bit, so I'm going to expand my horizons. I'm going to travel. I'm going to volunteer. I'm going to try to start a small business. And, like, I have to do everything else, too, but I'm going to experiment and go down different paths, and that's how I'm going to find, my purpose, the work I was born to do. And maybe that's how I'll find, those big goals, too, because most people actually don't really have, like, this big goal in mind from a young age. They only come to it like as they go down different paths and learn what they like and what they don't.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot about trial and error, I think.
Absolutely.
Better Environmentally Sound Transportation is bringing you the 20th Annual Commuter Challenge. The Commuter Challenge is a fun, friendly competition between individuals, workplaces, organizations, and students. Participants take transit, rideshare, car share, walk, cycle, or work from home. By tracking commutes online, participants see their total number of CO2 emissions avoided, fuel saved, and calories burned. There's absolutely no cost to register and participate, and you can win great prizes. Our goal is to encourage healthy, safe, and green communities along the coast and across BC by promoting sustainable commutes. Register now at commuterchallengebc.ca.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Electronics Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org.
I wanted to speak with you a bit about your latest book, Born for This, which you've been on tour for over the past couple months. In the book, you share stories of people with really diverse backgrounds and interests who found the work that they were meant to do. And I'm wondering, when you were first starting out your career, were there any books or people who helped you discover what you were passionate about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was partly inspired by a lot of the people that I worked with in West Africa. Like, they're not online celebrities, they're not authors or bloggers. They were just kind of doing some really great humanitarian work. And I found that very challenging, for myself. I thought, well, if they're doing, like, some of those people have been there for 10 years or 20 years. And I thought, if they've done all that, like, surely I can do something. As for books, I really liked the book Wishcraft, like W-I-S-H by Barbara Scherer. She's someone who was writing about this kind of field of, finding multifaceted work, doing more than one thing, not necessarily following a traditional path. And she was doing that a long time ago before it kind of became a popular thing. So I think it's always good to go back to her work.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. There's one story in your book that I thought was really great. When you talk about how you were first starting out as a writer, you hosted your first book tour in very peculiar locations, and one of them was a grocery store. And I'm wondering how you found that kind of dedication and passion for your work.
Yeah, well, again, I don't know if it was like, here's my vision. I'm going to go and host, events in 50 different states and every province in Canada, and here I've got it all figured out. It was more like, I want to do this. I have great readers in these different places. And at that point, I wasn't like a known author, so I couldn't necessarily like go to every bookstore and say like, oh, I'm coming, I want to do an event. So I did events, in some bookstores, but other people were like, well, we don't know who this guy is. So I kind of, took matters into my own hands. And fortunately, with the help of a lot of my great readers, that's how we found different venues. And there was a yoga studio, there was a Pilates studio, there was a pizza place, there was like a heavy metal concert hall in San Francisco, which was pretty funny. And then, as you mentioned, the grocery store, which was probably the funniest of all. And so after that, I said, I don't want to do any more grocery stores, but I do love, going out on the road and meeting people and hearing stories.
For sure. That would have been quite the adventure. From going from those book tours to the ones that you're doing now, is there anything that you miss about the old ones?
I don't think I'm doing things that differently. Like, now I'm not in grocery stores, but otherwise, the vision is still the same. I mean, right. The vision and the connection, and like, I'm going city to city and I'm talking with interesting people, and maybe there are more people. So that changes the dynamic a little bit, but You know, basically it's the same kind of thing that I'm trying to bring this message. I'm trying to issue a challenge to people. And it's not so much a top-down, you know, educational campaign. Like, I am trying to share what I've learned, but, you know, the message is informed, you know, throughout the way by, you know, everybody that I meet. So it's kind of a collaborative experience. And, you know, I've been doing this for maybe 6 or 7 years now, and I still love it very much.
That's awesome. Speaking of creating community, you host an event each year called the World Domination Summit, and I love the name. And I'm wondering if you could speak a bit about how that developed and what you're planning for this year.
Yeah, people either love the name or hate it, which is interesting. And I think that's a good, you know, kind of thing to think about when you're developing your own project. Like, you don't want something that, you know, everyone loves. You want something that's very kind of specific. So, you know, as for, like, you know, how that came about, it came about through those meetups. It came about through, like, all these different people and the desire to say, okay, let's bring together like-minded people, you know, not just from one city, but from places, you know, all over the world, and see what we can learn from each other. And, you know, we started with a few hundred people, you know, way back in 2011, and now it's a few thousand people. But just like the tour, you know, it's the same values. You know, it's very much about community, adventure, and service, and seeing what we can do to help people pursue their own dream, and hopefully also make the world, you know, a better place at the same time.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night right at 9 p.m. after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
White Noise? If not, you're missing out. Join Richard Blackmore for half an hour of comedy every Saturday at 8 p.m. Then stay tuned for the after show, featuring a Q&A with the writer, actors, and a guest comic every single week. That's Saturday, 8 p.m. Join us.
You're listening to CITR, and today we're speaking with author and world traveler Chris Gillibo.
In your book, you have a list of questions that people can ask themselves, and I wanted to ask you some of them. I was a bit curious. One of the questions was, are there any philosophies that you live by?
You know, I have this kind of mantra that I built the Art of Nonconformity around, and it's just, you know, one sentence: you don't have to live your life the way others expect. And I've kind of expounded on that in different ways, you know, throughout all my work, whether it's about entrepreneurship, whether it's about travel and seeing the world, you know, alternative education. It's very much about saying, like, okay, you know, we live in a society where people have assumptions and expectations, and, you know, they're not all bad, but some of them are. And some of them, maybe they're not good or bad. It's just they're kind of traditional, and people have gone down these paths because that's what, you know, their peers have done or their parents have done. And so my goal is to kind of shine a spotlight on alternatives and encouraging people to maybe choose a different path, or if they do want to follow the traditional path, that's great too. But let's just, you know, ask ourselves questions like, is that really what we want? And if that is, that's great. If not, let's do something different.
Right. You first started out in university studying accounting, and then you switched to sociology. I'm wondering if it was difficult for you to kind of say, no, this isn't what I want to do, even though it maybe was what you thought you wanted or thought was expected of you.
Well, fortunately, I was very bad at accounting, and so the choice was kind of made for me. And, you know, I could have perhaps, you know, persevered, but I would have been a very mediocre accountant. You know, I would have just kind of, you know, been barely above the curve or something. And I just realized, like, there was something else that I was much more interested in, and that was sociology and studying people and groups. So, I mean, this brings up a good point, because one of the main lessons that emerged through the book's research is that, you know, in our society, we have this kind of belief that's kind of pushed on us. And that belief is that winners never quit, and that you should always persevere, and that, you know, perseverance is the predictor of success. And you hear all these inspirational stories of people who, you know, fail 10 times and 20 times, and then they finally succeed, you know, there are 20 stories. But like what I saw through the research is that winners actually quit all the time. And winners are actually not afraid to give up on something. And winners are not afraid to say, actually, I thought this was the right path for me, but it's not. And I'm going to go back and take a different path. Or maybe it was the right path for a season. Like, you know, maybe I was supposed to have, you know, 2 semesters or quarters of accounting study. And then I figured out that that's definitely not for me. But, you know, it was the path for a season, but now I want something different. So I think it's really important to be able to change your mind, to be able to say, like, okay, you know, I'm going to go in different directions, and that's all right.
You've interviewed so many different people about their experiences and shared them in your books. And what do you find is the most rewarding part of that?
For me, the most rewarding part, you know, there's lots of different pieces to the whole thing about the research, the editing, the writing, the publishing, the sharing, et cetera. For me, the most rewarding part is when there's some kind of connection created between me and a reader, or even someone who's maybe listening to this show. And when I say connection, you know, my goal is to help them take action in some way. And that's what really motivates me and inspires me. So, like, I don't necessarily want people to say, oh, I read this book and I liked your book, or listen to this interview, that was a good interview. Like, what I want them to say is, like, I read your book, or I heard this conversation, you know, with Carly in Vancouver, and, you know, then I went and did something different. Then it helped me in some way. Like, I applied this to my life. It gave me a little bit of insight. Maybe it gave me the courage, or not necessarily courage, because I already had the courage, but it showed me how to do something. So that is very motivating and rewarding to me.
That reminds me of something you've said in one of the TEDx talks you've presented, in which you talk about how we make a bargain with fear and how we ask it not to show up as long as it lets us live our quiet little lives. How would you encourage people to overcome that fear or step into it?
I would encourage them to pay attention to the discontent that they feel. And, you know, this discontent is that little voice that's saying, like, okay, you know, sure, you could do things, you know, this way, and that would be fine. Like, you're not a bad person, and you could have a good life. But maybe there's something else, like, you know, underneath the surface that you really want to do. And maybe you know what it is, and you're just trying to figure out how to do it. Or maybe you just have that sense, that longing, you know, I actually don't want that quiet life. I actually want to have something that's more active. I do want to challenge myself. You know, I think you should pay attention to the discontent. Because a lot of people do kind of, you know, make these bargains with fear and discontent, as you said. But I really believe if you let that into your life and say, actually, like, I'm going to respond to this, I'm going to engage with this, I'm going to try to explore different paths, even if I have the fear or the whatever the obstacle is, I'm going to live with this. I think that's a positive thing.
For sure. You've done so many different things. I know you've published 4 books, you've been to every country in the world, and you've created an incredible community through your work. But I'm wondering, when you've achieved so many things that most people dream of their whole life, do you ever find it difficult to figure out what to do next?
Well, you know, just like I said, fortunately, I wasn't good at accounting. Something that I am good at, or at least what I'm motivated by, in addition to the, you know, connection with people, I like to create things. Mm. I like to build things and make things. And I actually like it just for the process of making and creating. So for me, it's not so much about, like, oh, I have the 4 books or whatever. Like, I'm thinking, well, what's the next thing? What do I do? And I actually take enjoyment, you know, out of that. So I'm still very motivated.
That's great. Yeah, I think it's so easy to get stuck in, oh, well, I've done this and this and this, and look to the past rather than the future and how much more you still can do.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So I'm wondering where our audience can get in touch with you to learn more about your work and find out more about the World Domination Summit coming up this year.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I am Chris Gillibo online. So it's G-U-I-L-L-E-B-E-A-U, chrisgillibo.com, or on most social media. They can go to bornforthisbook.com to learn about the new book, or worlddominationsummit.com to learn about WDS.
Well, thank you so much. It's been great to hear about all the things you're up to, and it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
It's been a pleasure for me, too. Thank you, Carly. Okay.
Thank you for joining us today on Question Everything, where we bring you inspiration and insights from creative minds and experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can download the show at iTunes, SoundCloud, and at citr.ca.
This Canada Day, celebrate by making a difference with the Run Canada Day at Westbrook Village. This 5-